This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 16th of March, 2012. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 16th of March 2012, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Claire Caffreen.
Good morning.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Sheila Shepherd.
Good morning.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now let's look at what's on. Well, the Chesil Theatre in Winchester is presenting Heroes by Gerald Sibleiras, translated by Tom Stoppard, and it's directed by Caroline Helke. Performances are on Saturday, March the 24th at 7:45pm, and then March the 26th to the 31st at 7:45pm, and there's a matinee Saturday the 31st at 2:30pm. It's set in France in 1959, and three veterans from the First World War are vigorously combating the boredom of life in a home for retired soldiers. And there's a Mayfest. Mayfest brings concerts, sessions and Kayleys to Winchester's streets, pubs and arts venues for 2 days of folk, jazz and all sorts of things in May. It's on Friday, the 25th of May at 10am to Saturday, the 26th of May at 11pm. Location is in and around Winchester High Street. And then there's the County Service of Thanksgiving for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. It is to mark the Queen's 60 years reign. Winchester Cathedral will commemorate this special occasion with a County Service of Thanksgiving. Date and time is Sunday the 27th of May, 11am to 1pm, and the location is at the Winchester Cathedral. And then the Churchill Letters are read by Robert Hardy and Celia Sandys, and that's Thursday the 31st of May, 6pm till 9pm, and the location is the Guildhall in Winchester. And we've also got Anne Widdicombe and Alastair Stewart at the Theatre Royal. It's a charity conversation. Two famous names will be heading to the Theatre Royal in Winchester to raise money for the city's Rotary Club. One of them will be Anne Widdicombe, who has previously appeared at the venue to speak about her career in politics, followed by television. Both of them are freely giving their time to support the Rotary Club. She'll be in conversation with Newcaster Alastair Stewart, who lives in Bramdean. The organisation is currently raising funds for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. It also provides shelter boxes, which are filled with essential supplies and shipped to disaster zones across the globe. The event at the Theatre Royal in Jury Street will take place on Monday, April the 16th at 7:30pm. Tickets are priced at £25 and available from the theatre box office on 01962 840 440 or www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. And that's all we have for what's on. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 16th of March at 6:17am and begins at 6:13pm. On Wednesday the 21st of March, it ends at 6:06am and begins at 6:21pm. Now, if you have any problems with your memory stick, please contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826 and she will then send you a replacement. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, please, before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. The front page headlines this week are: Phone Mast War kicks off again, Actor Tobias reprises royal role, and the police cuts begin to bite. So, may we have the story behind the first front page headline, please, Claire?
Phone mast war kicks off again, trying to wear down the community. They have blocked it twice and are now gearing up for a third phone mast campaign. Residents in Abbots Barton are accusing Vodafone of trying to wear down the community by targeting the same site in Winchester. They have told them it won't work and they are preparing for a battle. It comes after the company teamed up with O2 last year in a failed effort to build seven masts. Six were withdrawn and one refused by Winchester City Council, the most controversial being in Abbots Barton. Residents blocked Stoke Road at its junction with Worthy Road, where the mast would be built. Mother of three, Julie Mitten from nearby Collie Close, who led the campaign, said they would fight again. "We can't believe they're making another application for the same site. They shouldn't be allowed to keep reapplying for the same site. We're appalled. They keep trying to wear down the community in the hope that we're just going to give up, but we're going to fight." She added, "Our opposition remains the same, and we don't see why the mast has to be built in a residential area when there's so much open land nearby." First plan was shelved in 2009, followed by another 12 months ago, after more than 50 residents objected. It was a similar story at the corner of Stony Lane and Stockbridge Road in Wick, which the firm has also targeted twice. It came after Hutchison 3G asked to build a mast in 2002 on the Texaco garage that used to stand near the junction. Residents fended that off with a 700-strong petition and threats to boycott the filling station if it went ahead. Vodafone and O2 also tried to build in Chilbolton Avenue last year, along with the Pitt Manor roundabout on the A3090. They also targeted the corner of Winnell Manor and Alsford Roads and Berwick and Andover Roads. All six schemes were shelved, while another to enlarge a mast at St Anne's Close Badger Farm was rejected. The companies argued that the masts, technically known as base stations, are still needed. This week, a Vodafone spokeswoman said, "Vodafone and O2 have identified that the 3G coverage in Winchester should be improved to ensure customers can use mobile phones and devices where they live, work and spend leisure time."
And the story behind the second front page headline, please, Noel.
Yes, actor Tobias reprises royal role. Shoppers could be forgiven for thinking that Winchester's most celebrated son had returned from the dead. But the revival of King Alfred the Great was actually a campaign to promote English Tourism Week. Playing the role of the historic Wessex ruler last Saturday, March the 10th, was 24-year-old actor Tobias Jones from Kent. He walked around the city centre, taking in the High Street, the Buttercross, the Westgate and the City Museum in the square. He also paid a visit to the Broadway, which contains the iconic statue of King Alfred that keeps such a watchful eye over the city. On his travels, he met a host of people, often checking if they were Vikings before striking up a conversation. Mr. Jones said, "I did most of my research about King Alfred on the internet and found a few websites that were very useful." To minimise the chances of historical experts catching him out, he deployed his shield as a secret weapon. On its reverse was an extensive series of notes detailing the Saxon king's life story and achievements. The event was also The event was also designed to promote the Best of British Festival, which will run throughout the summer in Winchester, and there's a huge picture of Mr. Jones, dressed as King Alfred, standing below the statue and taking up the same pose as the statue.
And the third front page headline, please, Sheila.
Police cuts begin to bite. Plans have been revealed to completely shut a Hampshire police station to the public. Councillors expressed resigned disappointment at the news that Bishop's Waltham Police Station's front desk will close tomorrow, March the 16th. They told how residents will now be faced with a journey to Eastleigh or Fareham for their nearest face-to-face contact. Hampshire Police said the move was part of a review the force is trying to save more than £50 million by 2015. It said local safer neighbourhoods teams would continue to be based in the community and would be available at beat surgeries and community meetings. Residents will have to phone 101 for all non-emergency issues, such as reporting a crime or obtaining advice and information, but can phone to arrange a visit from an officer. For matters such as producing documents, they will now have to use front offices at Winchester, Eastleigh, Alton or Bitton police stations. Front desks at White Hill and Petersfield are also being closed. Jean Hamerton, City Councillor for Bishops Waltham, said, "I'm disappointed but pleased to note that the actual police station will be manned 24/7 in this area, which is growing all the time, so at least there will be a police presence. Whilst we would all wish it hadn't happened, I think in the current climate and cutbacks to the police, we just have to accept it and be glad that there still will be a station." Bishop's Waltham Parish Councillor Jill Stainer said, "It's bad, really. If you have to take your driver's licence in, you have to go to Fareham or Eastleigh. It's a long way." Meanwhile, Alsford Police Station will close in June, the Town Council heard last Thursday. In future, as expected, the police will be based at the fire station on Pound Hill.
Thank you. Now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, people in pictures, historical items, chronicle comment, and first person. I'll start with the death notices. Appleton, Evelyn May, née Earwecker, Appleton, aged 86. Blair, Eric Gordon Blair, after a bravely fought illness. Bowen, Carol Bowen, peacefully at home. Gilman, James Mervyn Andrew Gilman, peacefully aged 92. Hale, Robert John Bob Hale, aged 88. Holman, Dennis William Holman, peacefully at home, aged 82. Smart, Elaine Bessie Smart, peacefully in hospital, aged 66. Stone, Bessie Stone, peacefully, aged 97. Thompson, Barbara Thompson, peacefully at West Holm, aged 84. And Wolfe, John B. E. M., John the Milk, Wolfe, in hospital, aged 79. And now it's Christian comment, read by Claire.
The West doesn't have the answers. The revolution in obtaining information was illustrated by a recent inquiry from a former student about a video on Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda. Through YouTube, Facebook and Twitter, thousands of young people had become interested in an African problem and started sharing it with their friends. That is applaudable. I am happy that the young are idealistic enough to be moved and want to make a difference. In Winchester this weekend, girls from St. Swithin's School will be focusing on the dangers to women in childbirth with special emphasis on the Christian Aid Project in Sierra Leone. On Saturday, they have a public meeting at the University of Winchester and will conclude with a Mothering Sunday Evensong in Winchester Cathedral, having put a lot of effort into the fundraising for the project. This is one example of many where young people are involved in trying to make a difference. You will be aware of many more. Yet the reaction to the Joseph Kony video has not been all positive. Many have questioned the funding of the video. Some have asked whether its intention was to justify the USA getting involved in African politics. Others asked how up-to-date the information was. I share both the wariness about the video and the conviction of the video that the Lord's Resistance Army has caused great suffering. I know this because the Winchester Diocese for many years has welcomed the Reverend Canon Janet Mahindo, the Church of Uganda's provincial children's officer. She has had personal experiences of children abducted, of those who have been orphaned, of those who have had their education taken away because of LRA activity. So I'm glad that many young people are now aware of the problems that have existed in northern Uganda for 20 years. The difference is that they do not know how to react to their newly gained knowledge? Who can they trust to do something? Who can they trust with their money if they wish to give? Knowing Janet Mahindo means that I have confidence that she will know what is appropriate and right because she is Ugandan. She does not need instructions from us on how to solve these children's problems. She comes to teach us. That is what I wish for these young people who have just heard of Joseph Kony through the wonders of the internet, that having this knowledge will lead them to find out who is working locally and not to believe that the West has the answers to the world's problems and can ride to its rescue. Terry E. Hemming.
Now we've got 12 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes. New lighting is big asset to Winchester, says Mike Davis. Sir, living in Badger Farm, which has already seen the transformation of its street lighting, I, for one, have been impressed with the change from orange sodium to white fluorescent, with a marked reduction in glare and general light pollution. The old columns and lanterns were in need of replacement, and looking very tatty after 30 years of service, and this is the case of much of the lighting stock across Winchester. The new residential white lighting levels are more than adequate and offer better night visual perception. I've appreciated the care taken with landscaping around the columns and think the new equipment looks good in colour-coded Hampshire green and is a big asset to the area by day and night. So well done, and thank you to all involved in this worthwhile project. Mike Davis, Loud and Close, Winchester.
And this letter entitled Fountain Photo, it's from Jeanette Cutler. Sir, I recently came across this photograph of Upper High Street in Winchester and was surprised to see the fountain, which is now situated at the bottom of Oram's Arbour. My mother remembers it in the late 1930s and early 1940s at Oram's Arbour, when it did actually function as a water fountain and the children would play in it. I wonder if anyone knows when it was moved and why. Wouldn't it be nice to see it restored to working order once again? Jeanette Cutler, St. Stephen's Road, Week, Winchester.
Peter Hargreaves pays tribute to our fallen soldiers, brought up with dukes in blood. Sir, I was devastated to read of the deaths in Afghanistan of the young soldiers from the Duke of Wellington's regiment. I was called to national service in 1953. Most of my friends who were also called up were allocated to the Royal Artillery. For some reason I was never able to ascertain, I was assigned to the infantry and the 1st Battalion, the Duke of Wellington's regiment. Basic training was at the regimental depot at Wellesley Barracks, Halifax, the then home of the regiment. Most of my new colleagues were from the Pennine Hill farms, mills and engineering industries. Although I came from the Barnsley area and was called the foreigner by many of the lads who had never been outside their hometowns, they treated me as one of their own, and I have never forgotten their loyalty, friendship and comradeship. They would josh the farm lads, and the farm lads would josh the lads from the mills and the factories, but they remained a stoutly united team. Apart from brutal basic training, I grew to enjoy my life with my new companions and even had a girlfriend from Halifax. The young men from Huddersfield, Halifax, Bradford and beyond are brought up with the dukes in their blood and have always been recruited into the regiment. From when they were the 33rd of Foot, and later the Iron Duke's own regiment, they have fought in all the major battles of British history. Although many in Hampshire will not be familiar with Yorkshire affairs, I'm sure they will join me in the mourning that has once again hit the stricken families of these lads. Whatever happens, I know young men of their calibre will always volunteer to join their regiment, no matter where they will be sent, and no matter the consequences. Peter Hargreaves, Hyde Lodge, Winchester.
Helen Chambers praises first-class service. Sir, might I speak up for the good service offered by the Discovery Centre? For some years we have borrowed a wide range of titles for our reading group. This has proved to be a valuable and thoroughly reliable facility, and the staff have been unfailingly helpful. Helen Chambers, Dean Lane Reading Group, Takedown, Winchester.
D.I. Scott writes, City of Rubbish. Sir, Winchester, City of Kings, don't make me laugh. It should change its name to Litterchester, City of Filth and Rubbish. I firmly agree with P.E. Smith's letter about the state of the roads leading into the city. I also support Councillor George Beckett's plan to stand down from his position on the council, but not to go for Hampshire Police Commissioner, as he is the right man to sort out Winchester's rubbish and litter problem. D.I. Scott, Brereton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Peter Moore says we're struggling to cope. Sir, Winchester was highlighted on BBC Radio 4's Today programme on Monday, March the 12th, for its shortage of places for those children about to start school. Reference was also made to a similar situation in Southampton, where the situation is exacerbated by migrant families, which tend to have more children than the UK average. Both cities reflect a nationwide problem. As the UK fills to overflowing, except, sadly, its water supply, our housing stock and services struggle to keep pace. Surely it is time for our elected representatives to bite the bullet and demand on our behalf a zero net migration policy and an intelligent programme to encourage smaller families. Peter Moore, Orams Arbour, Winchester.
And Freddie Crabb asks, are victims of crime receiving justice? Sir, I recently wrote to a national newspaper thus: is the public aware that victims of crime have no prospect of justice? Police are allegedly beyond examination by ministers, MPs, HMIC, police authority or the IPCC. Theresa May advised me that whatever chief constables decide cannot be questioned. That would amount to interfering with operational matters, which in my experience has made it possible for police officers taking an active part in the commission of crimes to do so with immunity from prosecution, leaving victims without access to justice. There is a dedicated, honest, former Hampshire detective sergeant with high integrity, courage and moral fibre currently struggling for justice in a Havant tribunal at great cost to himself, whereas the public purse is funding the police and police authority defence. Has the appearance of justice been seen to be done? A witness against him last week was a policewoman now on trial for attempted murder of her lesbian lover, reported in the Telegraph on March the 2nd. Does this sound like administration of justice or perversity? Now I read that George Beckett is standing down to apply for the police commissioner's post. Good luck to him. I wish him a clean fight under Queensbury rules. I also wrote, I am concerned how the appointment of police and crime commissioners is being handled. Freddie Crabb, Hensting Lane, Ulsterbury.
And now a letter about the Winchester street market. Mr. Meyer writes, quality or lack of it, the real point here. Sir, everyone seems to be missing the point about the Winchester street market. People like Robert Sanders, Steve Brine and myself are not so much objecting to the location of existing stalls, such as the fruit and vegetable cellars, as to the encroachment of the market up and down the High Street on days other than Wednesday and Saturday. I particularly object to tacky stalls up past the Buttercross and down towards the Broadway. The Tourist Board survey simply asked people how they felt about stalls relocating to the High Street. That is not the issue. There are just too many stalls selling low-quality goods that should not be there. To George Beckett and his friends, raising extra revenue seems to be more important than the interests of the people who enjoy walking along the High Street. E. Meyer, Chester Road, Winchester.
And another one about the markets from Chris Turner. Sir, I am responding to the letter from Tony Mundy in last week's Chronicle, suggesting a naivety on the part of the Winchester Business Improvement District in relation to the market stalls in the High Street. I have to say that, on the contrary, the Winchester BID was opposed to the markets in the High Street from the beginning, has made its views very clear in a number of different forums, and has been lobbying hard to amend the decision. We were as surprised as most of your readers at the outcome of the survey, but as rational business people, most of our members are having to deal with the market as best we can. We have been working with the city to ensure higher quality stalls, better spaced stalls, and better access to our members' businesses, and this has been to some extent successful. Nonetheless, we are absolutely of the view that the growth in footfall in the city is a response to the work that the BID and its partners have been undertaking, and specifically the BID funding of advertising, Christmas lights, hanging baskets, extra policing, graffiti and chewing gum removal, festival sponsorship and the like during the past year. We will work with Winchester City Council to ensure the markets move down to the Broadway when the Silver Hill development is completed, and we will continue to mediate with our members, the City Council and Southern Market traders to minimise the problem the market causes and maximise the benefit. Chris Turner, Executive Director, Winchester BID.
And another one from Jeff Hill, who asks, all those in favour? Sir, I too was astonished at the research showing a 95% approval rating for the high street market, calling to mind the survey of a few years ago which claimed 83% of residents favoured a fortnightly bin collection. In addition, would someone from the council care to explain the logic in spending a reported £2 million on the handsome repaving of the high street and then destroying its visual effect for £60,000 a year? Jeff Hill, Cannon Street, Winchester.
And Phil Yates writes about the market. City should rethink ill-planned scheme. Sir, I entirely agree with the comments made by Ron Allison, first person call, and letters from Tony Mundy and Veronica Taylor, Chronicle March the 8th, about high street market stalls. So will not enlarge on them, but I should like to mention a point that concerns me over health and safety regulations. If someone is suddenly taken ill, or a fire breaks out in one of the shops behind the market stalls, I shudder to think how an ambulance or fire engine is going to attend the emergency situation. That aside, I am not in favour of stalls in High Street from Middlebrook Street to Market Street. Traffic access to Market Street is restricted for most of the week, and it must be horrendous for delivery of goods to the High Street shops. Pedestrians are also affected by congestion from those purchasing items from the traders. By all means, continue to have the stalls from the Buttercross to St. Thomas Street, but I suggest most traders could be transferred to Middlebrook Street car park, where the Sunday morning market is held. What about the car owners who use this park? There are three park and ride car parks on the edge of the city that are easily accessible. As the County Council went to enormous trouble and expense to refurbish the High Street, it is a shame part of it is taken up by stalls, and, who knows, some of the fine work carried out by those excellent workmen may have been done in vain. Let us hope the City Council will seriously reconsider this ill-planned scheme before too long. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And still on the market, Tony Wyman writes, Sir, your correspondence last week and your own editorial on the popularity of the High Street Market have all missed the point. It is not a popularity contest. The issue is about whether locating the market in the High Street is the strategically correct decision and whether the City Council is working with the business community. Neither political party comes out well. The previous administration did not involve the BID, and the current one has been slow to accept our arguments. Early on, we said there was too much congestion in the lower High Street and not enough attention to quality. When we suggested moving stalls to above the Buttercross, this was dismissed as not how markets work. The belated move and quality improvements have done much, even though they were implemented at the riskiest time for business. December. We still await the promised end of the Thursday market. Early debate rightly concentrated on potential damage to Winchester's image. However, popularity brings its own problems. The High Street is already successful, and adding the market increases the contrast with the rest of the town, making Upper High Street, etc. seem empty and lacking in spark, risking damage to independent businesses and giving support only to the multiples. The market now needs to be used strategically, and the key to this is St. George's Street. This is heavily polluted by through traffic and corrals the High Street, preventing the natural circulation of shoppers. Through traffic needs to be stopped. The road becomes shared space, like the square, and the home of the street market, using it strategically to improve Winchester and improve shopper circulation around all the shops. This will also be essential to bind in Silver Hill and a refurbished Brooks. Tony Wyman, Childhood Dreams, Southgate Street, Winchester.
And that's the end of all of the letters to the editor. Thank you to all the contributors. Now it's time for your say. We went out on the streets and asked passers-by, are you worried that Hampshire is facing a drought? Noel has replies.
Right, first from Craig Lamble, 28, project manager of Cannon Street, Winchester, said, I don't believe it will impact me directly, as it's not really come on my radar. I remember we had hosepipe bans, but I don't see a hosepipe ban as too serious. I'm more concerned about NHS reforms at the moment. And Anne Mitchell, 53, teacher of Downlands Way, South Wanston, said, not really, as there's probably enough to go round, but as individuals it won't make much difference. I read that 96% of water usage is industrial and agricultural. There's not much we can do with the other 4%, but every little helps. Philip Craze, 59, carer of Francis Gardens, Abbots Barton, said, it is a concern, people want to live in Hampshire, but there are too many of us. Everything's finite. In Spain, every drop of water is precious. Here, people don't really care. I do think we need to be given a shock. And Kaylee Dunn, 24, a model and mother of one of Manor Road, Winnall, said, I'm shocked by the possibility of hosepipe bans. You expect droughts in other countries first. It sounds like it's come quite quickly. People definitely need to start thinking about how much water they use.
And now something slightly different. Sheila has people in pictures for us.
And the first item is entitled Libby Lifts Second Title. Dog owners and their furry friends have been doing the county proud at the world's most famous dog show. Winchester environmental manager Claire Johnson and three-year-old Libby came away with a Best of Breed award in the annual Crufts show held at the Birmingham NEC. The Cougar Hound fought off competition from 47 other dogs to scoop the honour in Ms. Johnson's fourth year taking part. It's the second time Libby has come away with a Best of Breed award in 2 years. She said, to win again is a fantastic feeling and I'm very proud of her. She's a very energetic little dog, but she managed to behave herself and to win at Crufts is a fantastic result and we're delighted. Joan Miles of Chandler's Ford won Best of Breed and came second in the group with Ferris, a 7-year-old Keys hound, in his first time at the event organised by the Kennel Club. To do as well as this is a real surprise and we were really nervous before going out into the main arena, said Miss Miles. But we coped well and Ferris was fantastic throughout. It was an amazing day and I'm really proud of him. And this is accompanied by a picture of Claire Johnson with Libby, who is very like an English Springer Spaniel. The second item, entitled Jolly Roger Weekend. A hospice near Winchester has been besieged by pirates, but these scurvy sea dogs were not after pieces of eight or holding anyone to ransom, but patients at Naomi House's Jack's Place. The hospice for teenagers and young adults with life-limiting conditions was transformed into a tropical island, including palm trees, parrots, and sandy beaches. Patients dressed up in pirate gear and were taken on a special treasure hunt, using music and touch to make it into a story and help youngsters with limited cognitive abilities. They were joined by the care team at Jack's Place, who also dressed up in their finest eye patches and bandanas to join in the fun. Katie Burton, activities coordinator for Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "We all had a fantastic weekend. Being able to bring such enjoyment to the youngsters through music and sensory activities is a great feeling."
Now we're going back through the years and into our archives for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Claire.
1987. The Winchester International Year of Shelter of the Homeless has just completed an intense week's survey on homelessness. Not only did it seek to find who was homeless, but also who were in temporary or unsuitable accommodation. So anyone without a roof over their head, squatting in B&B, in a hostel, or sleeping on a floor, was urged to fill in a form. The results were 18 identified themselves as totally homeless, and 71 responded who were in short-term accommodation. And the next item. Winchester Cathedral Trust has turned to shock tactics to boost funds. Some 100,000 leaflets are being distributed throughout the diocese, and inside each is a disturbing vision of how the cathedral could look in 100 years' time. The drawing by architect Keith Bennett shows the cathedral as a ruin, with half its roof missing and its famed stonework crumbling. Above it reads, "Is this what you want your great-grandchildren to see at Winchester 100 years from now?"
And Noel's got 50 years ago.
Yes, two items from 1962. Traffic accidents in Hampshire show a slight reduction upon those recorded last year, but the proportion which were fatal remains high. Altogether, 841 accidents were recorded during January, 25 less than in January 1961. Over 500 of these resulted in no injury, but in the remainder, 6 were killed, 133 seriously injured, and 246 slightly injured. Figures for 1961 were 5 killed, 136 seriously injured, and 285 slightly injured. And the other item is about men and women of the Royal Observer Corps who took their annual intermediate and master tests on Sunday. Number 14 Group ROC, based in Winchester, held tests at venues in Winchester, Salisbury and the Isle of Wight. The Odeon Cinema, Winchester and the Gaumont Cinema, Salisbury, each absorbed 200 post-observers for an aircraft recognition film test, followed by a paper on the new role of the Corps, reporting and monitoring nuclear bursts and radioactive fallout.
And from 1812, forged notes of £1 are in circulation, with the name J. Vaughton subscribed. They are not ill-executed, but the face of the woman and the word London are badly done. The orb on the crown appears like a tassel. The paper is harsher than the banknote, and they may be detected by the words One and Bank of England not appearing in the watermark. They are dated December the 3rd, 1811, and the part printed in the true note is imitated in engraving in the false one. And secondly, R. Young of Marnell was committed to Dorchester jail for stealing geese. Same day, his daughter, Elizabeth, was committed for breaking open a cottage and stealing £3 in money and bills. And his sons, Thomas and George, one 12, the other 14, guilty on their own confession of housebreaking, stealing corn, potatoes, etc., for 3 years past. In consideration of their age and the bad example of their father, were ordered to be sent to sea.
And the last historical item, please, Claire.
100 years ago, 1912. On Friday, a smoker in the drill room at the Plough Inn was aimed at arousing interest in the Wessex Division Transport and Supply Column, Army Service Corps. It cannot truthfully be said that there was a large attendance, but among those present were Major Bowker, Lieutenant Colonel H. Longfellow Cooper, and Captain K. Holman. Major Bowker regretted that there were not more young men of serviceable age, but hoped they would tell their mates what they had. And Friday afternoon, the Reverend J. Hugh Bellhouse was inducted into the vicariate of Mitchell Dever with East Stratton by Archdeacon W. A. Fearon. A psalm was sung and the hymn, "O Thou Who Makest Souls to Shine," a shortened form of evensong, was used. An excellent address was given by the Archdeacon, who congratulated the congregation on being present in such large numbers and such a stormy day.
And it's back to the present. It's time for editorial comment by Noel.
Yes, editorial comment is about cramming towns as the only option. This week, a major housing scheme was opened, another approved, and a third hung in the balance. The issue of where to build new homes in the Winchester district won't go away. Some argue that house-building targets were wrong, while others want to raise the drawbridge and declare King Alfred's historic capital full. The word full was also used by Whiteley councillor Sam Newman Mackay to describe her own rapidly expanding community. But Winchester City Council still decided that it could take another 75 homes. Like a holidaymaker cramming luggage into a suitcase and sitting on it until it closes, developers keep finding new sites. And that will continue all the time that greenfield sites remain difficult, or in some cases, impossible to develop. Pouring concrete onto virgin fields makes few people happy, which only leaves the option of town cramming. As the Chronicle went to press, plans to replace two homes in Stanmore with 9 new ones hung in the balance. The housing association behind it, Radium, also opened 29 affordable properties in Kingsworthy this week. Residents and civic chiefs sang its praises. So it would appear that once the thorny issue of where to put new homes is settled, the end result is often welcomed.
And it's first person, read by Sheila.
And this week Rosemary McMullen writes, "Spartan stoicism is not for me. I'm often grateful for the Spartan upbringing I endured in Scotland. For years I slept by an open window and scampered from unheated bedroom to unheated bathroom over linoleum floors. Washing was a speedy wipe with a flannel and an uncomfortable rub down with a soggy towel. When the gremlins struck recently, I was forced into a new appreciation of the up-to-date improvements I take for granted. First it was the oven. Preheating usually takes 10 minutes before tossing in the dish of the day. So why, 20 minutes later, was it stone cold? Nor could I light the gas hob. I rushed downtown to buy another fuse, but still not a flicker. It also dawned on me that the reassuring hum of the boiler was missing and the radiators were chilled to the touch. Fortunately, I had a small fan heater, which was better than nothing, and I could always warm myself with a hot shower. Or could I? Like the boiler, the shower light was blinking hopefully, but the water did not reach hot. I was under the flow already, but the lukewarm trickle was on a par with soggy towels, and there was nothing for it but to grab the coziest pyjamas I could find and dive into bed. Having discarded such ancient items as hot water bottles, there was nothing for it but to drag on the woolly socks I saved for rambles and wave my limbs around to restore circulation. I rang and arranged for an engineer to visit and inspect the cooker. The day before the due date, my answer phone brightly informed me they had to cancel due to a lack of engineers, but I could call back and rearrange. I was not pleased at having to wait another week, but it was just as well, as it turned out. I'd arranged for a man to remove my old dishwasher, and while with me, he took a look at my switches. I had, of course, done that and seen nothing wrong. But he noticed that the end one had tripped. One flick and the cooker was back in business. Another stroke of fortune was finding the phone number of the guy who had installed my shower. Amazingly, he was in the area and could come right away. He coaxed my reluctant boiler back into action, though warned that the fan had a fatal condition and its remission might not last long. He also told me if I had switched on the immersion, I could have used the shower. How stupid am I not to have thought of that? In my usual overdramatic fashion, I had been anticipating weeks of showering at the swimming pool and making do with microwave meals. I was even on the point of digging out thermal underwear. While resigned to being a stoical Spartan for a while, my relief at the return of my mod cons was considerable, and the first thing I did was to make a dash for my walk-in shower.
And now we'll continue with some items of general news, beginning with one read by Claire.
Staff not swayed by reassurances from civic bosses. Civic chiefs have reassured staff at Winchester's children's centres over their job safety. The Chronicle revealed last week that seven centres had lost control of subsidised Sure Start services for children and families under a county council shake-up. The council put the services out to tender to save £6 million, but confirmed 120 family support jobs would be protected, with the new providers taking over their contracts. Action for Children was named as Winchester's new provider last week and will now manage services at the Carroll Centre in Stanmore, Sparklers in Winnell, Rain and Shine in Kingsworthy, Sunbeams in Alsford, Little Petals in Bishop's Waltham, Merry-Go-Round in Wickham and Happy Valley in Denmead. Councillor Roy Perry, Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, said, "In line with the decision taken in May 2011 and as part of the ongoing contractual arrangement, all family support posts will be protected into the future as part of the contract arrangements." But Colin Smith, chairman of the trustees at the Carroll Centre, denied they had been reassured over the future of internal jobs and services. He said, "We had a meeting last Tuesday to discuss the changes and to share our concerns, but we did not discuss loss of jobs or the loss of services with the County Council." Councillor Perry said the competitive tender process enabled the Council to invest £1 million more in children's centres. He added an extra £500,000 per year would go towards a speech and language therapy service. County Councillor Brian Dash blasted the decision to outsource the running of children's centres as the most disgraceful decision he had witnessed since first being elected in 1989. The New Forest Lib Dem councillor added, "It is not keeping the centres open that is the issue, but the services available in them. I've not heard anyone at the council say all the services currently offered will be available under the new arrangement." Emma Horn, Action for Children Operational Director of Children's Services in the South, said the charity would be looking for a smooth transition. "While we look forward to putting this knowledge and expertise into helping more families in Hampshire to give their children the best start in life, our immediate priority is a smooth transition to Action for Children from the current providers, ensuring the families can continue to benefit from the support they need."
Food hygiene offences cost caterer £95,000. Unidentifiable food found in raid on filthy kitchen in week. And there are three graphic photographs of filthy kitchens. This is the disgusting mess that food inspectors found at an illegally run Hampshire catering firm. Tired of its repeated flouting of the rules designed to keep people safe, council officials raided Paul Gillingham's suburban base in Winchester. Inspectors found unidentifiable food in the filthy kitchen, including 30 joints of meat, also food in freezers under tarpaulins in the garden. High-risk food was even stored in a Ford Transit, including mayonnaise, which had to be kept below 8 degrees centigrade but was at 18 degrees centigrade. With the case closed, pictures of what inspectors found have just been released. Now Gillingham, 55, faces a £95,000 legal bill that, barring a major windfall, looks set to follow him around forever. Winchester City Council has won an order against him under the Proceeds of Crime Act because he was running an unlicensed business. Gillingham has earlier admitted 30 food hygiene offences and was fined more than £7,000 by Winchester Crown Court. The Proceeds of Crime order means that Gillingham must repay £95,000 made by county caterers while it traded illegally between October the 27th, 2004 and October the 27th, 2010. It was based at Brookwood Industrial Estate, Eastleigh, but was gutted by fire in November 2010. A former employee, Julian White, 54, of Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, Winchester, has since been jailed for 4 years for arson. Gillingham temporarily moved the firm to his father's council house in Vernham Road, Week, Winchester. The City Council ordered him not to use it, having not legally registered it for food preparation. That was where the photos were taken. At the sentencing, Recorder of Winchester, Judge Keith Cutler, said even though nobody fell ill, there had been a serious risk to public health. To cover more than £7,000 of legal bills, the court heard Gillingham would have to sell his car, his van, and empty his bank account. He faces jail if he does not pay, and the city council has now obtained another order against him. It can collect up to £95,000 of Gillingham's future income or make a claim against windfalls. A council spokeswoman said, "It's a personal debt that will follow him around forever. If and when he comes into any money or assets, we can put a claim into the court. The £95,000 is the figure we believe is the proceeds of crime by being unlicensed, money that he couldn't account for in the accounts and cash payments. Half the money will go to the Crown, 37% to the City Council and 13% to the courts." Councillor Victoria Weston, Cabinet Member for Environment, said, "Winchester City Council takes its role in ensuring public safety very seriously and has a dedicated team of professionals ensuring it is safe to eat in the district. This case has involved a lot of work and demonstrates that the council will not allow food providers to operate in any way that could put people's health at risk." Paul Gillingham's firm has no connection with County Caterers of Portsmouth, which has an exemplary reputation and would like to disassociate themselves from any connection whatsoever with the illegally run company.
Petition launched to reverse bus cuts which reduce quality of life. Angry residents in Alsford have launched a campaign to resurrect a local bus service. A big chunk of the town lost their buses when Stagecoach rejigged the service last October, cutting out Sun Lane in favour of more buses on Jacklands Lane and New Farm Road. Jan Harding has organised a petition and gathered some 125 signatures from people in the Sun Hill area and spoke at last week's town council meeting. Town councillors expressed support for her efforts. Dr Harding of Derwent Gardens, Alsford, said, "It used to take me 3 minutes to get to the bus stop. Now it's nearer 15. People feel very angry. They feel abandoned. Some people are feeling very stressed out. People living in this southeast corner of Alsford are not going into Winchester so much to shop. Others are using their cars more." Dr Harding added, "We would like to see the buses rerouted back into Nursery, to Sun Lane, Tishbourne Down, to the Cricketer's Pub." Also affected by the cuts introduced on October the 3rd is Old Alsford, which no longer has a bus service. Simon Cook, City Councillor for the Alsford, said, "The County Council made a bad decision in allowing the bus company to remove the regular 64 bus service from the Sun Lane area, which has reduced the quality of life for some elderly and disabled residents. I was disappointed at the leader of the City Council's flat refusal to help with some funding support to restore the lost service."
Martin Todd calls for NHS bill to be dropped. Martin Todd, Winchester's former Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate, has been battling against the NHS bill at his party's spring conference. Mr. Todd, defeated by Steve Bryan at the general election in 2010, spoke against the controversial health proposals. He was one of the keynote speakers at the Gateshead Conference, forcing the issue against the wishes of the party leadership. In his speech, Mr. Todd of Lloyd Lindsay Square Week said, "The bill is talked about as a simple system with your GP in charge, and it's not. Firstly, more than 40% of the NHS's budget will be controlled by the new National Commissioning Board. Quarter of local budgets is being transferred from your local area to the biggest national quango in UK history. Centralisation, not decentralisation." Mr. Todd added, "The government should drop the bill, go back to the coalition agreement, and work with health professionals to come back with a bill that deserves support."
This seems like a really good idea to me. Taking some of the stress out of grieving. County chiefs have launched a new service making it simpler to notify public authorities after the death of a loved one. Tell Us Once aims to reduce the stress of paperwork and phone calls after the death of a relative or partner. It involves county registrars sharing details of deaths with up to 24 other organisations, including HM Revenue, Electoral Services, Housing and Council Tax Offices and Libraries. This will allow them to update their records and amend benefits. The service will be available to residents when they attend a death registration appointment with their local registrar. The service is being run by the County Council, together with the Department for Work and Pensions and district councils across Hampshire.
Enterprise M3 to host conference. A conference that aims to nurture economic growth along the M3 will be held later this month. Enterprise M3 is marking its first anniversary of local enterprise partnership status with the conference on March the 28th. The partnership, which encompasses a fifth of the population of the South East, 1.6 million people, and 86,000 companies, brings together businesses and local authorities to support and encourage entrepreneurship and enterprise. To celebrate the various initiatives, Enterprise M3 will be hosting the free event at Sandown Racecourse for businesses across the region, which stretches from the New Forest through Hampshire up to Surrey. George French, chairman of Enterprise M3, said, "This first year of the local enterprise partnership has seen us undertake a number of initiatives, including the recruitment of leading businesses, volunteers, a major research program into the wants and needs of local businesses, as well as securing 14.7 million of government funding to create much needed jobs and housing through investment in infrastructure. This second year of operation will see us concentrate on championing what business wants, delivering infrastructure improvements, lobbying for superfast broadband to rural areas, and supporting companies to access the finance they need to grow their businesses, as well as promoting an increase in the number of businesses offering apprenticeships." Ken Thornber, leader of Hampshire County Council, said, "Local jobs and business growth are a high priority in this area, and the private-public team, led by some of the region's most influential business people, is working hard to see quick wins as well as long-term sustainable growth."
Message to scrap metal thieves. Police in Bishop's Waltham carried out a day-long clampdown on scrap metal thefts last Saturday. Officers set up checkpoints in and around the village in a bid to snare thieves or unlicensed dealers making their way to county scrapyards. As well as being on the lookout for suspicious loads, experts from Customs and Excise, as well as the Vehicle and Operator Services Agency, were on hand to check on the safety of vans, flatbed trucks and tractors using county roads. Winchester North Rural Sergeant Mark Lamper said, "Days of action like this are successful in that they help disrupt criminal activity and send out a powerful message that we are checking for scrap licenses and monitoring large carriers." And this is accompanied by a photograph of a couple of police officers talking to people in a flatbed truck.
"I unearthed a ring from the Bronze Age," says metal detector enthusiast Alan Cracknell, talking to Emma Stretfield how he discovered jewellery dating back 3,000 years. It had lain undiscovered for around 3,000 years, but a ring dating back to the Bronze Age was uncovered by a metal detector enthusiast from Winchester. Alan Cracknell was on the verge of giving up his search for the day when he came across the rare find. In his 30 years of the weekend hobby, Mr. Cracknell has found items like buttons and buckles from the Georgian period to the medieval period, but nothing like this. The 74-year-old of Brassy Road, Winchester, said, "You may find that ring one minute and then a Coke can the next. It was almost as if it was waiting, wanting me to find it." The gold-plated ring, thought to have been used as decorative jewellery or as currency, was found in farmland in Headbourne Worthy back in 2010, but has now been ruled treasure by a Winchester coroner. When the retired artist first came across the object hidden in the earth, he thought it was a bottle top. "I might never have found it, because you don't go in the same area or fields twice," said Mr. Cracknell. "There it was, shining as good as it was thousands of years ago. Incredible. I put it in the palm of my hand and realised how old it was and what it was. I was very shaken and very excited. You're the first person to handle that for perhaps 3,000 years. That really gives you a buzz." He added that he was pleased to save an artefact for the area that might otherwise have been destroyed by farm machinery. Rob Webley, a finds, lies and officer for the British Museum, said the penannular ring, which is deliberately incomplete, dates from between 1300 and 800 BC. He said it is rare to find gold items at all, and even rarer to find them from that period. Mr. Webley thought the ring would be worth several hundred pounds, and it seemed likely the Winchester Museum would buy it. It is now for the landowner, who wishes to remain anonymous, to decide what to do with it.
Cathedral concert showcases the Rifles Band. The battlefields of Afghanistan and the majesty of Winchester Cathedral may be a world apart, but they will be brought together at a concert later this month. The Rifles will be showcasing their band to fundraise for charity, as well as their own Care for Casualties appeal, on Thursday, March the 29th at 7:30 p.m. Mayor of Winchester, Barry Lipscomb, has selected Care for Casualties as one of his chosen charities. The VIP audience for the concert, to be compared by newsreader Alastair Stewart, will include the Duke of Gloucester and the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan. The programme includes a mix of regimental and military music to more modern classics. Two other charities will benefit, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance and the Winchester Cancer Research Trust, which supports the breast care unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Councillor Lipscomb said, "I'm delighted that His Royal Highness has agreed to be my guest of honour, and am also grateful to Alastair Stewart for acting as our compere. Military music is a particular favourite of mine, and this concert definitely feels like one of the highlights of my mayoral year. The Rifles enjoy the freedom of the city of Winchester, whose people have always been supportive of our armed forces. I hope that our people and those from further afield will join me to fill the cathedral and enjoy a magnificent evening of entertainment in aid of my excellent charities. Tickets are available from the cathedral box office and cost £25, £15 or £10. Blue badge disabled are £25, but the carer ticket is free. A limited number of tickets for the Royal Gala reception and concert are also available at £50 from the Mayor's office.
Winchester men tackle deadly race. The heat is on for a pair of Winchester men taking on a dangerous marathon challenge in the Sahara later this year. Sean Cassia and Alex Zulewski will put themselves to the test by running 156 miles in 7 days while carrying their own food, clothing and water rations. Competitors sometimes die. Mr. Cassia, 32, a commodities trader, and Mr. Zulewski, 29, an accounts manager, are two of 300 Britons in the 2012 Marathon des Sables race through the desert. Pair are raising money for the Multiple Sclerosis Society and aim to collect £5,000 between them. Mr. Cassia of Stockbridge Road has experience running marathons and said he was confident his training would pay off. "I'm feeling a whole host of emotions currently, and the fact that I haven't done anything like this before is making me feel apprehensive. But the training I've put in and the support from family and friends will undoubtedly spur me on." Mr. Zulewski of Clifton Terrace said he was aware of his limits and the dangers of trying too hard. "I'm not going to win or get a high place. I'll take it a day at a time and finish. Every year, around 1% of entrants die, so I'm not going to get ahead of myself." A decathlete, Mr. Zulewski said his motivation to finish was for personal reasons after his grandfather died of MS. "For me, it's the motivation which will get me through it. I'll be thinking about the burden he went through if I start to falter, and that will spur me on." The race begins on April the 6th. To sponsor the pair, visit justgiving.com/Alex and Sean Marathon des Sables, D-E-S-S-A-B-L-E-S.
Divine Dusters save church £1,000 a year. The Feather Dusters were out in force last weekend as Winchester residents began spring cleaning. The Divine Dusters met up at St Mary's Church in Kingsworthy on Saturday for a tidying session ahead of the Diamond Jubilee celebrations. But the group was actually formed to help the church after it could no longer afford a professional cleaner. Lorna Selwood, 52, of Nations Hill, helped form the group and said, "We have a fantastic, enthusiastic team and we are committed because we can save the church £1,000 a year. We aim to do two big clean-ups per year and we have a weekly rota for some of the smaller jobs." St Mary's has a full programme of events planned for the special weekend, and the group of church members were keen to make it look spick and span. And there's a lovely picture of a group of 10 of them, very mixed group in the church, all holding all sorts of cleaning equipment, from vacuum cleaners, brooms, squeegees. Ironically, there's not a feather duster in sight.
Mm-hmm. Builder jailed for tricking pensioner. 3 years for targeting vulnerable man. Rogue builder Shane Cole has been jailed for 3 years after tricking a pensioner out of £63,000 for roofing work that was worth only a couple of £1,000. Cole, 25, of Bullington Lane, Sutton Scotney, called 9 times on Derek Riley, 87, who lives near Stroud in Gloucestershire, demanding checks for non-existent work. At Gloucester Crown Court last week, a jury found him guilty after an 8-day trial of 2 charges of fraud by false representation. Jailing him, Judge William Hart said, "In my judgment, you could not have a more blatant example of deliberate targeting of a vulnerable victim than this." Mr. Riley spent a long period of time nursing and caring for his wife, who suffered from Alzheimer's disease. She died and he was left alone in his mid-80s. He was then open to exploitation by the likes of you. The fraud was over a period of months and the loss sustained by Mr. Riley was substantial. This sort of offence not only has a real effect on the victim, but undermines the confidence of elderly people in general when they employ workmen to work on their houses, believing it to be genuinely needed. Cole had been tried together with 4 other defendants who were all alleged to have played roles in defrauding Mr. Riley or laundering the cheques he handed over. Another man, Jimmy Barney of Bradley Road, Warminster, was jailed for 1 year for a similar offence. 2 other defendants, Cole's brother William of Sutton Scotney and Barry McGowan of Warminster, were convicted of laundering cheques paid to Cole by Mr. Riley. William Cole, an assistant hotel and restaurant manager, paid 2 cheques for $26,000 and $4,600 into his bank account, and McGowan paid in £5,000 cheque which had Shane Cole's fingerprint on it. Judge Hart bailed Cole and McGowan for pre-sentence reports and said he would pass sentence in about 3 weeks' time.
Developers' pool scheme for old fire station site. Plans to develop Winchester's old fire station have gone up in smoke, but fresh proposals are expected. A scheme by Bargate Homes for the site in North Walls was due to come before planners last Thursday, March the 8th. However, Winchester City Council's planning committee heard that the firm had withdrawn its scheme. The developers had been hoping to build 17 two-bedroom flats and 31 bedroom flats, making 47 in all. Objections were made by the City of Winchester Trust, along with 20 residents. Concerns included the building being too large at a 4-story high and the site being overdeveloped. Parking and traffic problems were raised, along with overlooking of nearby homes. Council officers were also unimpressed and had already advised councillors to throw out the scheme. After the meeting, Bargate Homes manager-director, Angus Cook, said they had decided to pull the plan given the strength of opposition. He added, "We're looking at the officers' comments and at how we can work together with the council on this scheme." He said the company, which is based in Fair Oak, would seek talks with the authority before trying again. Mr. Cook added that they hoped to submit another plan in a couple of months' time, depending on the progress of the talks. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the old fire station.
Winchester WI Market hit 60. It's not just the Queen celebrating her Diamond Jubilee this year, but also Winchester Country Market. Launched as the Women's Institute Market in 1952, it has been trading in the district for 6 decades. Having changed its name to Winchester Country Market, it now meets at Badger Farm Community Centre. During the latest sale on Friday, March the 9th, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Barry Lipscomb, was the special guest. He toured the stands, which sell everything from cakes to marmalade produced by members. The market, which takes place between 8:30 and 11 a.m. on Fridays, also sells fruit and vegetables along with crafts. Following the Mayor's visit, the group held its annual general meeting.
3 stores in city centre to shut up shop, but new firm to take over the old central post office. 2 long-standing shops within yards of each other in Winchester's High Street are to close. The city's early learning centre will shut on Saturday, March the 17th, and Reflex Gift Store will then close on Saturday, March the 24th, or earlier if the stock sells out. The shops are either side of the Bridget Hart Foundation shop, which is currently being refitted. Meanwhile, Eaton Brown, a fashion boutique in the Brooks Centre, has also announced it is shutting at the end of the month. Reflex is one of only a handful of independent traders in the High Street. It was opened 2 decades ago by the late John Inchley, but has changed hands a couple of times since then. The current owner is Claire Priest, and the store's lease is about to expire. She said footfall had declined and there was increasing pressure in the gifts market from the internet. Aside from the owner, the store employs a manager and 1 part-time assistant. As for the Early Learning Centre, employees are waiting to hear if they will be offered alternative jobs. The chain was acquired by Mothercare in 2007, and the closure of around 100 stores was announced last year. A statement from the group said, "We can confirm that the Early Learning Centre store in Winchester will close on Saturday, March the 17th. The closure of this store is in line with our current portfolio plan. We hope this has not upset any customers and that they will continue to shop at our nearest store at the Swan Centre, Eastleigh. However, while 2 High Street shops are closing, a new one is set to open nearby in Middle Street, Brook Street. Winchester's old central post office is being taken over by Eastleigh-based firm Holmes & Co. It will specialise in kitchenware, soft furnishings, toys and gifts, and is likely to open later this month. Its spokesman, David Steen, said they hope to open more shops if the first one in Winchester was a success. The company is already looking at Salisbury, Southampton and Portsmouth. Its store in Winchester is likely to employ about 10 people, with around half working full-time.
On the record, find out more about the stories behind Hampshire's Red Cross workers at an exhibition. The Humanity in Action display runs at the Hampshire Records Office in Sussex Street, Winchester, to April 21st. It will feature stories of some of Hampshire's people who joined the charity over the last 100 years. Presented by the Balfour Museum of the Red Cross History, it is free and there is no need to book. The record office is open 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and Saturdays from 9 to 4.
Staff have celebrated the £300,000 revamp of a Bishop's Waltham store. The Kavanagh's Budgeons supermarket has been overhauled to create what the owner described as a state-of-the-art shopping experience. Changes at the independently owned premises include a new deli and bakery, more energy-efficient chilled cabinets, new lighting, flooring, refrigeration and increased food choice. Store owner Noel Kavanagh took over the premises on Winchester Road in 2006, but believes it was a Budgeons for at least 15 years before that. Mr. Kavanagh said he hoped the revamp would also lead to the creation of more jobs. He said these are obviously difficult economic times, a difficult climate, so we're delighted to be in a position where we can improve a village store. It's a significant investment and obviously we're delighted to be able to offer this shopping experience to the people of Bishop's Waltham Village. Bishop's Waltham has recently been divided over plans for a new Sainsbury's store in the Abbey Mill business site on Station Road. It was narrowly given planning consent by a Winchester City Council planning committee, and Sainsbury's hopes to see the first customers through the door in spring 2013. Mr. Kavanagh admitted that the new store was a concern, but said, "We just have to focus on the thing that we do well and continue to focus on an excellent fresh foods offering and good customer service and to be very competitive on price. Budgeons has more of a family village feel where our staff know the customers personally and the store has more of a personal touch."
May opening for Care Home. A dementia care home that cost £8 million and replaced a Winchester pub is due to open in May. St Catherine's View will create 80 jobs and stands on the site of the former Stanmore Hotel in Stanmore Lane. The firm behind it, Colton Care, had to fight a lengthy planning battle to secure permission for its scheme. Despite a vocal campaign by regulars, the pub served its last pint 3 years ago. The new dementia home will be led by Anne-Marie Med, who has nearly 30 years of experience in the sector. She said, "We've already appointed a number of very skilled care staff, including registered nurses with experience in caring for people living with dementia. It's a privilege to be taking the reins. It's not often that you are given the opportunity to be in at the start of something like this. I will really enjoy building a great team, working well together. Every member of the 80-strong team will undergo a specialist dementia care training course before the home opens. The purpose-built home has 56 ensuite bedrooms and offers specialist facilities, including activity rooms for music and memory work. The focus will be on retaining life skills for as long as possible through shared activities in 5 dedicated house groups of up to 15 residents. A marketing suite will open at the site later this month before the home officially opens in May."
Some take dim view of new streetlights. Thousands of streetlights across Hampshire are to be dimmed to save money and cut the council's carbon footprint. Transport Chief Councillor Mel Kendall has agreed to the move that will see brightness halved between midnight and 5 a.m. In addition, the computer-controlled lights will be dimmed by 25% between sunset and midnight and between 5 a.m. and sunrise. However, in crime hotspots or where there is a fear of crime, greater illumination may be provided. Council officials estimate the scheme will save the council £1.3 million and cut carbon emissions by 7,000 tonnes a year. The move comes as the Tory-led council is replacing its ageing stock of 145,000 lampposts with new white street lighting at a cost of £255 million over 25 years. Some 26,000 new lights have already been installed in the Winchester, Eastleigh, Hedge End, Basingstoke, Gosport and Rushmore areas. The new white light provides better illumination for motorists and pedestrians than the old orange sodium glow, but there have been complaints that the new white street lighting is too bright. The lights are currently dimmed by 25% between midnight and 5 a.m. Council officers said a trial scheme of the 50% dimming showed no discernible changes to the public perception of lighting levels. The move is likely to be welcomed by stargazers as there will be better views of the night skies.
A new leisure centre for Winchester would cost upwards of £15 million, according to a council report. Yesterday, as the Chronicle went to press, Winchester City Council Cabinet was discussing a report on the future of the River Park Leisure Centre. It is poised to ask for a report on the options for major expenditure on either a refurbishment or a new build. The council is currently investigating whether it should modernise the 30-year-old leisure centre or build a new one, with the former Serco depot at Bar End suggested as a possible site. The issue was brought up at full council recently. Councillor Patricia Stallard, lead member for Culture, Heritage and Sport, said of the likely cost, "It's really like saying, how long is a piece of string?" She said the minimum figure was around £4 million, but it could be way over £20 million. Councillor Stallard added that the rock bottom base would be £4.5 million, but thought Winchester would need a facility at least as good as what they had, if not better. And Winchester's leisure centre in North Walls Park is now 30 years old and feeling its age.
History rescues pub for now. The Meon Valley Village pub has been given another stay of execution after plans to demolish it were rejected. Winchester City Council refused permission last Thursday, March the 8th, to bulldoze the new inn at Swanmore. The pub, which dates to Georgian times with a large Victorian extension, was saved on historical grounds. It comes after the council refused similar plans for the Chapel Road watering hole 4 months ago. At the time, it argued that not enough had been done to show that the pub could no longer be profitable. The Green King pub has been closed since October last year. Agents for the developer, Andrew Scott, have also provided documents to show that it has been up for sale for nearly a year without anyone showing an interest. As a result, they returned to planners to ask once more to replace the pub with four homes. But the committee still refused, though not on economic grounds this time, but historical ones. Council officers argued that because the pub was one of Swanmore's oldest buildings, it should be saved. The vast majority of planning committee members agreed, including Councillor Jane Rutter, who said, "I think it would have been a tragedy for the community to lose this clear historical asset." However, Councillor Ian Tate said he understood that officers were going to back the latest plan, but changed their minds. He added that saving the pub on historical grounds had not been mentioned during the refusal 4 months ago. "I can't support the officers' recommendation just on the grounds of natural justice alone," he said. But apart from Councillor David McLean abstaining, the other 10 committee members all rejected the plan. It signalled victory for the 14 residents who had objected to the plan. The residents were led by Ray Freshwater, and there's a picture here of Ray Freshwater and fellow campaigners who are trying to stop the new Inn Swanmore from being bulldozed.
Some sports news. This is the Hampshire Under-17 Rugby Cup final between Romsey Colts and Winchester. With the weather more suited to Sunday afternoon cricket, the crowds gathered to see a confident Romsey Colts take on Winchester in the Hampshire Under-17s Cup Final. Currently playing near the top of the Hampshire Leagues and recently being knocked out of the National Under-17s Cup, Winchester was seen by many as favourites to cruise through the match. But the Romsey pack gave them problems both at set pieces and in the loose. Romsey got the first point on the board and led by 5 points at the end of the first half. But Winchester upped the pace in the second half against a team from two divisions below them in the Hampshire Leagues. Two successful penalties in quick succession gave Winchester the lead. Their spirits raised by the scoreline, they began a more expansive kicking game to keep the ball away from the Romsey pack. Some expansive rugby stretched the Romsey defence to the limit, resulting in a Winchester try, but a spirited defence kept the visitors' point scoring under the wraps. In the dying moments, Winchester went through, despite claims for a knock-on, to take another try and capped it with an extra couple of points. At the final whistle, Winchester claimed the win 18-5, but Romsey left the pitch with their heads held high. There's a photograph of the teams in Mortal Kombat here.
Sparshot's exotic aliens bridge 200-year-old gap in family's history. It was a very pheasant way to celebrate some family history. Andrew Impey made the short trip from Winchester to Sparshot College last Friday on March the 2nd to meet some Himalayan monal pheasants. Also known as the Impeyan monal, it is named after one of his ancestors, Lady Mary Impey, wife of Sir Elijah Impey, who was a judge in Bengal in the late 18th century. She had a keen interest in nature, and while in Asia, she commissioned several pictures of the local wildlife, including the variety of pheasant that now bears the name of Lady Impey, 1749 to 1818. The birds are not found in Britain, but there are some at Sparshot College. As a result, it welcomed Lady Impey's great-great-great-great-grandson to visit the birds. While there, he agreed to be matchmaker, introducing one of the males to the females. The former are noted for their colourful feathers, while the latter are more understated. Impeyan monal pheasants weigh 4 or 5 pounds and can grow to 2.5 feet long. And there are two little pictures, Andrew Impey and his new friend, one of the pheasants, and on beside that, portrait by Thomas Gainsborough of his great-great-great-great-grandmother, Lady Mary Impey.
Royal's front-of-house revamp. Theatre Royal chiefs want to move the venue's box office to face the Discovery Centre in Tower Street. The Jury Street Theatre also revealed plans this week to relocate its café, currently hidden from public view at the rear of the building, behind the current box office. Moving the box office would provide space for a reception area leading straight into the cafe. Marketing manager Kate Rain said the exact cost was not yet known, but it would not be a major sum and could be covered without any need for fundraising. And while some parts of the building are listed, they would not be changed in the scheme, she said. All the same, the theatre recently invited the City of Winchester Trust to the venue to outline its proposals. If approved, the work will be done in August, when it is usually quieter. It normally sets aside a fortnight for maintenance jobs, which would include the front of house revamp.
Homegrown talent gets chance to shine. This year, a Bishop's Waltham festival offers a range of activities to keep people entertained, but also a chance for homegrown talent to shine. The annual event has everything from Circus Street Theatre to Shakespeare, steel bands to pavement art, and will be taking place in a variety of locations in the village. The fortnight of events, which runs from Friday, May the 11th to Saturday, May 26th, kicks off with a Battle of the Bands contest for local youth talent to show what they are made of at the Jubilee Hall. Children's workshops on the first Saturday in drumming, pottery, street dance and maypole dancing held at the junior school will lead to performances on the stage in the high street the next as part of the free festival day. Aspiring singers in the community are encouraged to come along to make a village community choir, which will rehearse Vivaldi's Gloria and show songs, which will be performed the same evening in St. Peter's Church. This is part of the free festival day on Sunday, May the 20th, from 10 to 3, which will include an Italian market, storyteller, street band, Circus Street Theatre, barbershop singers, a college jazz band, live drumming, pavement art and face painting. Monday will see showcases by four village theatre companies and a restaurant concert with live music as you eat in the evening at the Waltham Tandoori. Jane Austen fans are bound to be in abundance at an evening of readings and music focused on the novelist's work held at the library on Wednesday. The alternative is a comedy night at the Crown Inn, due to reopen after refurbishments on March 19th. Other events include Shakespeare's As You Like It, performed outdoors in the grounds of the Bishop Waltham Junior School by the Rain or Shine Company on Thursday, and a concert featuring rock and roll hits from the 1950s and 60s at the Jubilee Hall on Friday. The week, sponsored by Fuller's, end with children's theatre session and improvised stories, and this is accompanied by a photograph of the Bishop Waltham Barber Shop Singers.
Peter Simmons College students make a vital difference. Peter Simmons College students, past and present, have been celebrating the real difference they've made to children's lives both in Uganda and Kenya. Students who raised money and helped build a schoolhouse in Kanjobi, Uganda, last year have been sent photos of the school, which is now completed. Kanjobi school management has informed them that the school has seen huge improvement in exam results for children entering secondary school, due to better teaching resources and conditions, and thanked them for the breakthrough. Meanwhile, students across the college had a general studies session on the college's Kenya 2020 project. They raised over £1,170 during the week for a deworming program being run by the charity, enough money to treat 23,400 children. Says Richard Genn, or Jen, Project 2020 leader and environmental studies teacher, the response from the students was amazing. So many felt moved to give by the simplicity of the project and the obvious need of the children. Their generosity will make a big difference to so many.
And here's another story about making a difference. Winchester women make a difference. Two Winchester residents will be giving a boost to their chosen charities. Anne Jury and Tracy Langford have won places on the Vodafone World of Difference programme, meaning they can work for a local charity of their choice. They are two of 500 chosen in the UK from more than 5,000 applications to the Vodafone Foundation. Anne will work part-time for 4 months at the National Motor Museum, Bewley. She will improve access to their collection of objects, photographs, journals and books by digitising them so they are available online. Tracy, a Vodafone employee, will work full-time for 2 months with Naomi House Children's Hospice. Her salary will continue to be paid by Vodafone. She aims to raise the profile of the charity, which provides care and support for children and young people with life-limiting conditions, using her marketing experience to work on fundraising events and regular newsletters.
Peter Martin, A Life of Service to Others. He spent more than 30 years helping charities, good causes, and community groups across Hampshire. Peter Martin has died aged 90, having been the long-time director of the Hampshire Council of Social Services, later became a Hampshire Council of Community Service, and is now known as Community Action Hampshire. He became its leader after the General Secretary, Walter Gibson, died in 1955. Mr. Martin was at the helm until retiring in 1986 and was awarded an OBE in 1979. In his role at the group, based at Beaconsfield House in Andover Road, he recorded several achievements, including helping to expand the Parish Councils Association and Hampshire Voluntary Housing Society. He also helped to launch several Citizens Advice Bureau, along with Age Concern Hampshire. In his retirement, he lived at Boyd Wood, Eastleigh, and died of heart failure on February the 17th. He is survived by his wife, Laureen, and their five children, Carol, Alan, Laureen, Jackie, and Hilary.
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Kate Butler, and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying, dispatch, and memory stick preparation team. And thanks to our readers. Thanks to Claire Caffrin.
Goodbye.
And to Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And to Sheila Shepherd.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet when you finish listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.